Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that takes its pleasures very seriously. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, I'm a partner of propaganda with Steve Haynes.
Hey Corey.
And we also have, for the second time in the series, lecturer in German and European politics at the University of Birmingham, Charlotte Galpin. Hello Charlie.
Hi Corey.
This is our series From the Cradle to the Grave, which is a series of podcasts about education, and this one is about tuition fees. We're going to have a look at the history of tuition fees as a policy and see what lessons that has, both for British politics and for populism. So tuition fees as a policy, or I should say abolishing tuition fees as a policy, became popular by the Lib Dems first of all, wasn't it? Because Labour pledged that they would not raise tuition fees and then brought in tuition fees. And so I'm guessing it was in the Charles Kennedy years, wasn't it, that Lib Dems brought in tuition fees as a policy?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was under Kennedy that basically abolishing tuition fees became almost a central part of the Lib Dem identity when it comes to the policy platforms. It was understandable why it became a pledge. But really, it never actually resonated that much in terms of actually generating many votes for them overall, which is always quite interesting when you look at the overall kind of narrative that's built up around this. It certainly did bring them in votes in specific seats. Mm. Cambridge, for instance, which used to be Julian Hubbard's seat, as an example.
Oxford Western Abingdon
as well. Although the loss of that seat was less to do with tuition fees and more to do with Evan Harris pissing off every single religious person in the constituency. But that's a discussion for another time. I suppose, I don't think it's unfair to categorise the Kennedy era of the Lib Dems as one more left-wing, but I also think in many ways more populist. It was very much maybe leaning towards a more kind of left-wing populism. It's not Bernie Sanders-style populism in the US, but...
I wouldn't describe it as populist. But they were definitely putting themselves to the left of Labour. I mean, this is also the context of the Iraq War and all of the protests against that, and they took the Lib Dems made that a big part of their platform. And I think it was around the similar time that Labour were increasing tuition fees.
Yeah, so it became just another kind of another arrow in the quiver of we're more left wing than Labour in effect. And I don't necessarily think it was ever intended to be this cornerstone issue for the party in any way. It was just one of many things which, you know, it made sense to try and outflank Labour from the left on.
And I suppose civil liberties is another one of those issues where the Lib Dems did outflank Labour from the left, which, I mean, in the latter half of the new Labour years was pretty easy to do on issues like civil liberties.
Most of the Tories were also managing that at that point. Mm. So
under the Liberal Shadow Home Secretary David Davis. I wonder what happened to him. And the Kennedy years, of course, there was that great Kennedy speech, "Ask not what tuition fees can do for you." Is that... But it was quite successful for the Dems, wasn't it? Because I think around about 2006-07, so after Charles Kennedy was asked to leave, shall we say, the leadership of the Lib Dems?
Yes.
That's a very nice way of putting it.
The Lib Dems were receiving about 30-35% of the vote among about 18 to 25-year-olds. So it was working quite well. I kind of slightly take issue that you kind of seem to downplay tuition fees a little bit, because, yes, it was important in key seats, but then the whole Renard strategy was campaigning in certain key seats.
Sorry, Renard.
Yeah, sorry. I think I heard a bat flapping its wings outside.
We have invoked he who shall not be named.
It's part of the Lib Dem strategy was in certain key seats where there are lots of young people like Sheffield Hallam and Oxford and Cambridge. Actually, it was quite successful in building up the parliamentary party.
I mean, in certain seats, yes, it was part of it. But actually, when you look at most of the seats that the Lib Dems held before the catastrophic wipeout under Clegg, most of them were rural. They weren't actually high areas with high numbers of young people. There were a few which stood out like that.
But I feel like it's not just about which seats actually helped them win, but the fact that it was a really key part of their message. So it was kind of like their flagship policy that they were promoting as something that was distinctive about the Lib Dems. And so even if it didn't necessarily win them seats everywhere, I feel like that was one key message that they were trying to...
And I suppose it helped them differentiate against both Labour and the Tories, because certainly the tripling of tuition fees, which is when you saw the Lib Dem support really kind of take off, I suppose, after that tripling in 2004, wasn't it? And then the Lib Dems did really well in the 2005 election. The Lib Dems always had the problem that they were fighting Tory Lib Dem marginals in the south and Labour Lib Dem marginals in the north, because the Tories supported the tripling of tuition fees.
It was a nice, easy way that they could differentiate against both in one move. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact that it was so kind of central to lots of the campaigning and things like that makes total sense in the context when you look at it. It wasn't a bad, necessarily say, short-term to medium-term move for the Lib Dems to actually focus on that. I think the issue was that they failed to expand on that identity. They just became the party of, we will oppose tuition fees, or we oppose the Iraq War. And when the Iraq War ceased to be of relevance to the British public, for the most part, you know, they had one issue.
Not for Labour Party.
They had one issue that people actually cared about. And they just completely failed to actually expand what they were about in the minds of the electorate.
So, in 2010, there was a pledge. Before that, Nick Clegg tries to get rid of the party's stance on tuition fees.
As does Vince Cable.
Does he?
Yes. Vince Cable and Nick Clegg were responsible for the move to try and actually get rid of tuition fees.
I didn't know Cable was a
watch. But yeah, Vince Cable's very, I think I've said this on the podcast, very good at presenting himself as being left-wing. Vince Cable...
He was an Orange Booker, wasn't
he? Yeah, he wrote one of the chapters in the Orange Book. He wanted to scrap the Department for Business. Cable wanted to get rid of tuition fees as well.
Mm.
I think because they both, Clegg and him, saw it as a bit of a noose around the neck, potentially. Arguably, they were right.
I mean, they were, because they put the noose around their necks and then jumped off.
So they both, Clegg, Laws, Cable, Danny Alexander, basically your Orange Book set within the Lib Dems, did try and make a move to get rid of the abolition of tuition fees as a Lib Dem policy.
And conference voted it down, didn't they?
Yeah, because did not succeed.
The Lib Dems make policy at conference. They have debates.
Democratic,
which is very, very unusual. I can't really get my head around it.
Yeah.
Having debates about key issues?
I know, it's madness.
We try not to have them in the Labour Party. It causes too many arguments.
Key issues like banning goldfish from fairs. Sorry.
What? You're having flashbacks?
I'm having flashbacks.
Who's banned goldfish from...
Oh, I'll tell you later.
For listeners who are also confused, it was a policy that the Lib Dems voted on, wasn't it?
Yeah.
At conference.
Yeah, it was. You know, it makes complete sense on kind of like animal welfare grounds giving out goldfish as prizes at like fairs and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't necessarily a bad policy, but it was not exactly a burning issue of the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, where were we?
So
we're going to get all that out. So Clegg and Cable end up being outmaneuvered by conference, and then they are stuck with the policy. That's not actually that unusual when you look at what conference tends to vote for in the Lib Dems. It's not unheard of for leaders of all stripes, going back to obviously Ashdown, having to put up with policies that they personally don't agree with, but they nod along as the head of the party, and they will even make the argument and the case for it. The problem really came during the 2010 election when, for some reason, despite not wanting really to be associated with the policy, every single Lib Dem MP and a ton of candidates signed an NUS pledge. Yeah, that they would oppose the increases in tuition fees in the next parliament. That is the thing I can never get my head around, is why they did that. You'd already got that ability to differentiate yourself on that front. It wasn't required to make those pledges to differentiate yourself more. And yet, for some reason, you know, you can find the pictures all online of pretty much every Lib Dem MP signing or holding up a pledge card for this issue.
Or like, and then even if they did having done that, why on earth then they didn't just stop any increase in tuition fees? Like, they could have easily made the argument, okay, we're a junior coalition partner, we can't abolish tuition fees. But they didn't have to triple them. And that I think is the completely incomprehensible thing to me, is how you can have a party where all the candidates signed this huge pledge to vote against rises in tuition fees and then triple them.
Yeah, I think what essentially happened there was the Lib Dems ended up in a, I don't want to say blinded by power, because that's not quite the right terminology, because it was Cable who was in charge of the policy.
Which Vince Cable are we talking about now?
We are talking about, at this stage, Vince Cable, who's pretending to be really left-wing.
Okay.
Because he thinks that Nick Clegg's quite weak and potentially he may be able to become the next Lib Dem leader.
Right.
Cable's in charge of the Department for Business and Industry, I think, as it was back then, and is responsible for the tuition fees policy. I think two things happened. One, Vince Cable is very intelligent and is able to kind of muck about and come up with models and actual policy ideas, which, you know, actually look like they're really, really good, because a lot of them actually are. And I think what, in effect, he came up with was very similar to what they have in place in Australia. In Australia, what they call it is a graduate tax. They literally do call it a graduate tax. And I think that's what they wanted to try and do. So I think there was a necessity to do something about university funding, in effect. They basically copied a system which worked elsewhere, which was called a graduate tax. But then they didn't follow it through by calling it a graduate tax. My guess is the Tories probably put the kibosh on that framing of it in some form. Mm. But then, because all of the Lib Dem MPs were probably in contact quite closely with Vince Cable, and Vince Cable's personally showing them how, actually, no, this is exactly how this is, as a rule of thumb, because, and all of these things are true, when you look into it, per month, people are paying less. The thing, the debt is, for the most, is written off after 20 years, some 30 years, something like that. I can't remember what the exact figure is. And you've got lots of little things which makes it sound like a very reasonable policy. And when you also say, and Australia's doing it too, you can easily see why the MPs might have gone along with that.
In fact, I do remember John Hemming writing an article for The Guardian basically saying that the Lib Dems had abolished tuition fees and had basically brought in the graduate tax. It was received, I think one can say, had a mixed response.
I mean, it's John Hemming, so everything he says has a mixed response.
Also, like, just because Australia is doing something, I'm not sure that's a...
As I say, why the Lib Dems are also in favour of a points-based immigration system. Yeah.
I think part of it's just because they knew exactly how much of a sticky situation they were in, and they were just desperate to try and find some way out of it. And Vince, because Vince is reasonably well-liked, he's well-trusted, he's very intelligent... he was able to present a solution to them, or rather, he was able to present a solution to Nick Clegg. Clegg went along with it, and everybody else went along with it because those two were going along with it.
I think ultimately this was a fatal decision for the Lib Dems.
Absolutely.
I mean, this, regardless of how you feel about tuition fees, this shows a complete lack of ability to read their voter base and why people had supported them. And they very publicly, in the first few months of the coalition, completely reversed on their flagship policy, which then, of course, makes you look completely incredible.
Absolutely. So, but I think from the perspective of somebody who used to be a Lib Dem member and was a member during the coalition years, if you asked Nick Clegg, or you asked a lot of the Lib Dem front bench what their flagship policies were from that period, they would have said the four things that were on the front cover of their manifesto, which were the things that they got, which they drew a red line under for the coalition negotiations. And I think that is basically where it comes from. As you say, they just didn't realise just how ingrained that policy was to people's image of them, because, as I said earlier, they just failed to expand on it. And it was because Iraq wasn't necessarily a politically relevant anymore.
Outside of the Labour Party, it was not a politically relevant anymore.
It was the only thing that people had left to identify them with, because on everything else, they were roughly where Labour was in terms of, oh, we want to spend a bit more on public spending. We're stronger on civil liberties than Labour, but then the Tories at least are claiming to be in this instance as well. So
I suppose with the pledge in 2010, people thought there was going to be an absolute Tory landslide anyway, didn't they? Because Gordon Brown was rubbish and looked weird and couldn't smile, and that was the only thing that was really important. So they probably thought, actually, that they wouldn't have to honour this pledge, that they would be in opposition and could vote against it and it would be fine, and then ended up in government.
Yep.
The other thing I think with Nick Clegg is that Clegg, like Blair, I think has quite a high belief in his power of persuasion. And the impression I get with Nick Clegg is he thinks, well, he can probably persuade most people of anything given enough time.
And I think on a one-to-one basis, you probably could.
And I think it's that thing where he thinks, well, I can just say very calmly and very sensibly why this is a better policy, except that's not
how people react to things. Quite. Yeah.
And also with those four important policies, those on the front page of the manifesto, well, people don't read manifestos, but they do see photos in the press of people with massive pledges on tuition fees.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a
mixed message.
It's a misreading of how people actually choose how to vote and what they think about a particular party.
Yeah, and I can't remember what the figures were, but they're like the percentage of people who read manifestos is like 10% of the voting population.
So they see key messages that get across. But I also think, like, with Nick Clegg, you know, he was an MEP in the European Parliament, and he has a lot of experience in Europe and knowledge of how other countries who are much more used to having coalitions than we are. And I think when the coalition was kind of a possibility, he was very much looking to how other countries do it and very much approaching it in a kind of pragmatic way, looking at how, you know, consensus politics works in other countries. And I have the feeling that maybe he was thinking, you know, that's just something that you do, you compromise on one issue, you can't always put forward everything that you want, but you know, this is a country that hasn't had experience of coalition governments and doesn't have that kind of culture of compromise. Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with Nick Clegg kind of approaching the coalition in a particular way that didn't really, that people didn't really
get behind in the UK. Yeah,
and the rest was history. So then, in terms of the history of tuition fees as a policy, Ed Miliband happens to Labour. It's typical of Ed Miliband's time as Labour leader. I can't actually remember what our policy was.
Wasn't it to decrease it to like £6,000?
I thought it was a graduate tax. Actually, it's very representative of Ed Miliband's.
That we can't even remember what it is.
In fact, we've got two identically opposed policies, none of which are really that satisfactory.
And any of which could be the actual policy.
Yeah. Then tuition fees and the abolition of tuition fees becomes a policy issue for Labour again. I believe in Jeremy Corbyn's second leadership campaign. Of course, regular listeners, you will know that is with Bantasaurus Rex, our good old friend Owen Smith. And in between Owen Smith joking about the size of his own penis and talking about fighting thousands of Welsh men off to marry his wife, Jeremy Corbyn was talking about a national education service, which is one of those things that is mentioned in the leadership campaign, which is still talked about in terms of Labour policy. And one of them was about trying to scrap tuition fees.
Yeah, I think what's very interesting, seemingly at least for Corbyn, definitely more so than it, I think it ever was for the Lib Dems, is the actual identifiable impact that pledge, I think, has had in terms of actually being able to flip some seats. Including ones which it just makes no sense that you would win as Labour, like Canterbury, a very high student population. And it seemed like they actually were exercised to go out and vote for Labour, this time in numbers higher than we would normally expect. The tuition fees policy is probably a big part of that. I think it's quite fascinating that actually that policy in and of itself isn't, you know, the most progressive policy you can have. For the most part, actually, the people who are going to university, I mean, the numbers are getting better, but it's still middle-class people going to uni. So which means, in terms of the progressive economics of it all, it's something which benefits people who are going to university who are more likely to be middle-class. That was in the manifesto. abolishing, getting rid of all of the cuts to welfare payment, to welfare benefits and things, which the have been brought in since the coalition, wasn't really in the manifesto and definitely wasn't given as much billing. So what's... It's quite fascinating that Labour, the party which is found, you know, prides itself on being progressive, prides itself on, you know, standing up for the working classes, for the working poor, and for the most vulnerable in society of many different sorts, has put this focus on a policy which is much more of a benefit to middle class people, and it's not the only example of that. A lot of actually of the tax rates. Although the tax increases that were in that manifesto were also deliberately done to exclude people who you would describe as high earners earning things like 60 odd grand a year, because they are public sector nurses and things like that. They're senior nurses, absolutely, but they are still nurses and they want to keep those people on board. So what we're seeing with Labour, and the tuition fees is a policy is a classic example of that, is actually a kind of a reach out to more middle class demographics as a way to try and win their votes.
I think one of the reasons that is because Labour has learnt the lessons of George Osborne, and the Osborne electoral strategy essentially is you find out who is going to vote for you and you promise them lots of stuff. And that worked really well with the Tories, with elderly voters. And Labour essentially identified its voting coalition. And as we've talked about on previous episodes, it's the Obama coalition. It's young people, it's ethnic minorities, it's often women, and it's public sector professionals, generally. And you appeal for them with free stuff, like abolishing tuition fees or increasing health spending. And it's, I mean, let's face it, it worked. It was much more successful, certainly, than Ed Miliband's strategy was of trying to get 35% of the vote and then only getting 31. And one of the reasons for that, I think, is that a certain transaction approach for politics. It's quite a populist approach as well.
It's very Blairite as well, though, is the thing.
The man. I think it's also, it's that evolution of Corbyn from as someone who is able to triangulate like that and is able to disdain Blairism and the idea of triangulation while
simultaneously doing it
over his politics and over Brexit.
I think the kind of the last real thing to say on this is that whilst tuition fees is a policy for Labour, it still remains to be a bit of a potential risk. Because if Labour gets into power, which it in all likelihood in some form will do, and it doesn't follow through with it, well, we've already seen examples of what happens. Now, it's not necessarily going to mean that it will be as disastrous for Labour as it was for the Lib Dems. Corbyn probably has a lot more political goodwill he can burn through to actually kind of get through that moment. But it is a potential risk that if they don't deliver on that policy, and for some reason, you know, they decide that actually these are going to be our priorities, that a number of seats do fall. So that you lose seats like Canterbury. Maybe given enough time, you end up losing seats like Sheffield Hallam again, or you lose Cambridge as well. Not necessarily back to the Lib Dems, but you could easily see, certainly in places like Hallam, which is quite an affluent area,
the Labour vote drops, so, and it could let the Conservatives
in.
And I think it's also kind of a risk, because it's not just about tuition fees, but how the tuition fee system has transformed it, the whole university system, and which is now really functioning as a market, and universities are functioning as businesses. So what he's talking about is completely transforming the university system back to how it was. And it's not just about the case of lowering tuition fees, but again pushing through a fundamental transformation of universities, and that's I don't think that's a very easy thing to
no it's not do. And I think one of the things, and I think we've kind of been guilty about of this in actually this discussion of tuition fees, I've got a friend who's an academic, and he gets very riled up whenever people start talking about tuition fees, because they always omit one major point, which is the point of tuition fees is funding is funding universities. If you are starting a conversation about tuition fees or graduate taxes or whatever without that as your central point, you're missing the point. Mm. And I think that's something which I think Labour haven't done. They've gone into this with the notion of this is electorally appealing to this group rather than this is what higher education should be for. This is how we fund it.
Yeah, exactly. It's about where the burden falls. Does the state pay for the funding of universities, or do students pay for it? And now it's, you know, under the Blair years, it was a kind of balance. You know, the students contribute, but the state subsidizes it. But now it's shifted completely the other way. So students are funding the bulk of the cost of the universities. And so, yeah, it's this kind of conversation about who should be paying for university education.
Mm. Let's end that there. The usual things, listeners, please. Please share this, even if you don't like it.
Subscribe to us.
Subscribe to us on iTunes. Facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. Be there or be square. You can follow me on Twitter at paperbackwriter.
You can follow me on Twitter at centerradica.
I'm not on Twitter.
But I'll tell you who is on Twitter. James Cram, who designed our logo. You can follow him on Twitter at James Cram. I don't know if Dave Deppett is on Twitter. Probably should give him a wave, maybe. But he did our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. And we'll have lots of stuff on the website as well. Notenoughchampagne.com. Happy plotting, everyone.